Translation. Mahesh Pandit, the seventh of the 12 Gopals, was very liberal. In great love of Krishna, he danced to the beating of a kettle drum like a madman. Purport. In the village of Mahesh Pandit, which is known as Palapada, is situated in the district of Nadia, within the forest about 1 mile south of Chakadaha railway station. The Ganges flows nearby. It is said that formerly Mahesh Pandit lived in the eastern side of Jirat in the village known as Mashipura or Yashipura. And when Mashipura merged in the riverbed of the Ganges, the deities there were brought to Palapada, which is situated in the midst of the various villages such as Beledanga, Berigram, Shukasara Gara, Chadude, and Manasapota. There are about 14 villages, and the entire neighborhood is known as Panchagara Paragana. It is mentioned that Mahesh Pandit joined the festival performed by Sri Nityananda Prabhu at Panihati. Narottam Das Thakur also joined the festival, and Mahesh Pandit saw him on that occasion. In the temple of Mahesh Pandit, there are deities of Gaur Nityananda, Sri Gopinath, Sri Madan Mohan, and Radha Govinda, as well as Shalagram Shila. Omaganata Manandasya, Gananjana Shalakaya, Chakshin Militamina, Tasmai Sigurave Nama, Sri Chaitanya Manobisam, Sapitamina Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita came out in, 1974, 75, one of those years. And even at that time, I think the earliest date that we had a lot of devotees going to India was 74. Prior to that, maybe, a few devotees going, but the massive devotees going, because by that time, book distribution had increased a lot. There was enough funds for the devotees to go, and so hundreds of devotees were going from North America and from Europe. And so for those of us who had not yet gone, India was still this very mysterious place. And so when Chaitanya Charitamrita came out with purports such as this, this is our first exposure, entrance into this mysterious place known as India. So it was a very, actually, the Chaitanya Charitamrita seemed, in a sense, quite exotic at that time, because it gave us a window into not only India, but these pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Panchatattva. So it was a very wonderful experience to see that. And then, as a result of that, having read these things in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, devotees would go there and they would search out those places looking for them and want to see with their own eyes what was going on there. This chapter is is about Lord Nityananda, the branch of the branch of Chaitanya tree of Nityananda. Nityananda was one of the primary branches of the this tree of Lord Chaitanya. And which means that the through Lord Nityananda, many, many, many devotees had come to Krishna consciousness and were taking and spreading Krishna consciousness all around. So just like a tree, when the branches grow out, they divide again and again and again. And so what starts out is one trunk, then when it comes to the limit, then there's many, many branches and sub-branches and so on. And so this chapter, and also the chapter before, explaining all of these various devotees who were connected with Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and so on. And so it continues on, of course, to this day with Srila Prabhupada's branch of Chaitanya Tree, ISKCON, being one of the very largest branches and branching out all over the world with thousands and tens of thousands of devotees everywhere. And it will continue to grow like that more and more. We will see in the future that this will branch and sub-branch and sub-sub-branch, and it will become so wonderful. People all over the world will actually come and participate in Krishna consciousness. So it's no limit. It's unlimited. Spiritual life is unlimited. And so it's actually showing how that nature, how from one comes two, comes four, comes eight, this geometric progression. And so it gives us some inclination or some understanding of what it means unlimited. So Lord Chaitanya, he's giving unlimited mercy, and it goes out just like the water through a tree, comes through the roots and then goes up to the branches and all sub-branches and so on. So the mercy in the same way is going out through all these branches and sub-branches, and it will continue to go like that. And of course, one of the ways the mercy goes out is here for the Prabhupada Marathon. Prabhupada Marathon, how many? We're going to get 100,000 books out for the marathon. That'll be so wonderful. And all of these people, they get these books. And, of course, many times they sit on the shelf for such a long time. But after some time, then devotees or people will pick them up. We call them not-yet devotees. The not-yet devotees finally pick them up. And they'll begin to read them, and they go, wow, look, I've been missing all this time. There's so many, there are many stories like this. Persons who have gotten the books, and it's sat on their shelf for 5, 10 years, something like that, before they've read it. Anybody here like that? Yeah? See, three in this crowd. So not unusual at all. So we call these time bombs, right? The time bombs are sitting there waiting to go off, and sometime in the future, so it'll be the spiritual revolution, right? Instead of the bombs of a normal revolution that are killing people, we'll have the spiritual revolution, which people will become happy. So just like make a little pitch for that. Actually, we're starting up the spiritual revolution. Spiritual revolution, spelled R-evolution, for the purpose of counteracting the degrading influence of the age of Kali. And as you all know, the world's becoming more and more strange and precarious and crazy. And so many people are just bewildered by what's going on in the world, and they don't know where to go for shelter. Of course, because my service was spiritual economics, I stay in touch with the economic news from time to time. And many people who write about economics, it's just an inexplicable situation that the whole economic system has become like a casino, just a gambling casino. And people are amazed that somehow or other it's going on. And they expect, so many of them, you'll always find there's what they call the bears. They expect the market to crash and everything to crash sooner or later. And and then what follows that is anybody's guess. But anyway, some of these economic writers, they write that, we don't know, it looks like it's going to become a terrible situation for everybody. And they write that only God can save us now. Right? People think like that. Only God can save us. So, yeah, that's our idea too. Actually, what we have in the world today is a result of an atheistic civilization. We shouldn't be surprised. And when you take God out of the picture, then what do you wind up with? You wind up with a bunch of demonic people who are simply trying to exploit each other and take advantage of each other, take as much as they can. Greed, envy, lust increases without limit. And so this is what you get. So we want to make the campaign that, no, we have to bring God back into the picture. So our spiritual revolution is two parts. The spiritual evolution, because now with Prabhupada's books, we have spiritual knowledge which has not been available widely practically, you know, for how long? For, you know, since the beginning of Kali Yuga, maybe. So it's very, very available to everybody in every language. So it's time for evolution, time to move on, time to grow, time to understand, you know, who we are as spiritual beings. So that's part of it. And then with that growth, with that understanding, then this actually creates revolution. And as the Bhagavatam says, that this literature is meant to create a revolution in the impious lives of a world's misdirected civilization. So that's what we want to do, create a revolution. You know, usually they see the sign for the revolution, they got a fist up in the air, you know. Viva la revolution, like this. So our revolution is like this, two hands up in the air. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And so the revolution is to encourage everyone to wake up in the morning and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra one time. With the purpose of imploring the Lord, please help us. So it's not that people have to shave their head, put on strange clothes, put paint on their face, nothing like that. No, you don't even have to believe in the mantra. It's like medicine, right? You take the pill and it acts, whether you believe it or not. So the mantra works, you believe it or not. Wake up every day, chant this magic mantra at least one time. Better if you do it more, but at least one time. And if we do that, the world will change. This is our claim. If Prabhupada was saying like that, if 1% only of the population will take up Krishna consciousness, it's enough to change the world. So this is the idea. This is what we want to accomplish with book distribution, with Harinam Sankirtan and so on. We want to create a revolution to save this world in its darkest hour. And it's hard to think how it could get more dark, but at least for some people it's very, very dark at this point. So many terrible things are going on. But anyway, if we, you know, in darkness, what do you have to do? You have to bring in some light. So no amount of darkness can cover up even the smallest amount of light. So we have to bring light into the picture, the light of the Bhagavad, the light of the Maha Mantra. In this way, the light of Bhagavad Gita, so people, they understand. When they understand the situation, the spiritual reality, their eyes open up and they can see things. They begin to see things as they are. So this is the Sankirtan movement of Mahaprabhu. This is the idea. To spread the rays of the benediction moon, the light of the benediction moon all over the world. And Krishna, because Lord Chaitanya, he's giving. He's the most munificent avatar, we say. Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Padayate. He's giving freely what no other avatar, what no other incarnation of the Lord has ever given. Pure love of God. So what a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, it's so wonderful, we can't even appreciate it, you know. If we look at this painting here, this beautiful painting that's on the front of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, all these little globes of the spiritual world, and then all these little universes down there in the Mahatattva, covered up by the Mahatattva, where we are now. It's beyond our comprehension what this is. But we have the light of the Bhagavat. We have this information from Bhagavatam explaining to us what our situation is. And so we have a direct route from one of these little dots there in the material world all the way up to Goloka Vrindavan. We have a direct path there. It's given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we have to appreciate, we should try to appreciate what we have, because before, you know, when people were following Vedas, they didn't go to Goloka Vrindavan. Even after they were liberated, they'd see liberation to Vaikuntha planets, not Goloka Vrindavan. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can go directly to Goloka Vrindavan and enter into the most intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna in their personal lila. Just imagine. We can be the friend of God. We can be the lover of God. What a most amazing thing. And we all have friends, huh? And as we all know, our friends aren't perfect. You know, sometimes they disappoint us in various ways, or sometimes we disappoint them in various ways. Our relationships are covered with some kind of fault. But this relationship with Krishna is perfect because Krishna's in the heart and he reciprocates with us exactly as we want to be reciprocated with. Exactly. So, you know the story, maybe you've experienced this yourself. Boy meets girl, and, you know, they start talking, so he asks her out on a date. And they're both anticipating what's going to go on, right? And she's thinking, he's going to say this to me, and he's going to take me here, and it's going to be like this. And he's thinking she's going to look into my eyes and with her beautiful smile, and it's going to be like that. And, of course, they're both filled with anticipation of this event, but normally it never goes anything like that. There's always something quite a bit different. But why? Because we don't really know what the other person wants. But Krishna, he knows exactly what we're looking for in that relationship. And he's willing to reciprocate with us exactly in the way that we want to be reciprocated with. And he leaves it up to us. How do we want to know him? How do we want to know him as a friend, as a lover, as a parent, like this? Well, how close do we want to get? What kind of intimacy do we want to have? He'll leave that up to us. And then he'll reciprocate with us exactly in the way that we want in the way that we want to have this exchange with him. Perfect, perfect loving relationship, eternally. So it's really, it's beyond our comprehension, how wonderful this is. But we should try to appreciate that our good fortune, our wonderful, inestimable good fortune that we have of having the possibility of developing such a relationship with Krishna. And Prabhupada's given us the whole process, from beginning to the end, everything A to Z, that we need to know to enter into that immediately after this lifetime. When I was here earlier this year, did I speak about what happens when we die? Did I give that lecture here? Anybody remember? Maybe I did, but you don't remember. It's amazing. Sometimes I give lectures and then I come back. And anybody remember that? Nobody does. Anyway, because I was speaking about that almost every place I went this year, so I thought I must have spoken about it when I was here earlier. But there's a number of people, of course, who have had that experience. Of course, a lot of near-death experience type books that we're talking about. But beyond that, there's people who are communicating with the people on the mental plane. And have experienced and have written. Actually, there's a number of books on the subject. I got a hold of one earlier this year, just back in, I think, maybe January or February. Three Cases of After-Death Experience, which is written about 100 years ago, in which a person, kind of a normal Joe, not too good, not too bad, he died, and from the mental world, you understand when we leave the body, we leave the body in the mental body, we go to the mental world. And so this fellow is there in the mental world and having a review of his life and seeing all the things that he, the mistakes that he made and all the opportunities that he had to advance spiritually but did not take advantage of them. So to try to make up for that, he wanted to contact somebody who was still living and tell him about, you know, what's coming after death. And he was able to do that finally with another person. And that person was able to develop their psychic ability to be able to travel to the mental world. All of us have the capability of doing that if we cultivate that ability. But so in this book, it gave three different examples. One fellow who was a soldier and a rather sinful person, And he went to hell. And it was all about his experiences going through the different levels of hell. Another person who became a ghost and was stuck on the ethereal plane after his life. And then another one, the fellow, the protagonist of the book, who was not so good, not so bad, and how he went to what we might call, or what the Christians call, purgatory, and whereby remembering the sinful activities of his life, was feeling great remorse in that way, purging himself from the reactions. Why did I bring that up? Maybe it'll come back. Anyway, what's going to happen when we die? And if people are very much concerned or bewildered about this. If you look on YouTube, it's interesting. I was writing last year this Change the Karma book, and I was looking on YouTube about experiences of hell. And there's a lot of videos on YouTube of people who don't believe in hell, because God, if God is God must be a loving person. So why he would send people to hell forever? You know, what kind of person is that? So therefore, I don't believe in hell. Right? So there's a lot of people who think like that. No, there's no hell. There's other videos of people who died and gone to hell. And you can tell from the look on their face that they experienced something very real, and hell was very real. Huh? So what's coming after we leave the body is people are, let's say, afraid of it because they don't understand life. What is life? If we understand how we're living in this body, in the both the gross and the subtle body, and the subtle body, we leave the physical body and the subtle body every night when we go dream. We go to the mental world in dream state. And those who are sensitive, they can feel themselves coming back into the body in the morning before they wake up. And so the difference is that at the time of death, that connection with the body is broken, and we stay in that mental world. Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Sri Sri Gornitai Ki. So where do we go in that mental world? Well, it's very interesting to read this book because it's explained. And by the way, it was actually, I was taken by it because it doesn't contradict our philosophy at all. And so I analyzed it in relationship to the Vedic knowledge. And it was completely harmonious. And what they're saying is that basically we go to that plane of consciousness that we've developed in this life. So to understand what that might be, you close your eyes and you feel yourself who you are. Who you are, that determines where you're going. Okay? The difference is that in the physical world, we have a duality established between what's inside and what we show outside. Right? So I can be smiling at you, very nice, right, and saying nice things to you, but in my mind thinking something very different. So this is called duplicity. Right? So I may be cheating in different ways, and in my mind I've got a different idea. Well, when we leave the body, we go to the mental world, there is no duality. Who we are is who we are, and it shows up there for everybody to see, completely. And why? Because it's mental communication. Simply by seeing the other, we know exactly what they're like. So, this is why we say that you don't take anything with you from this life except your consciousness. And to the degree that we develop our consciousness, this is determining where we're going to go. Actually, this whole thing came up when, probably about a year ago, I was giving class And one person, it was a Sunday feast lecture, some person asked about hell. That I can't believe that there's a hell, because God, he wouldn't make, you know, same thing as explaining like the videos. So the way I answered at the time was that actually where we go is simply determined by our consciousness. And so if we're a mean, angry person who likes to hurt, maybe kill other people, then we go to that mental plane suitable for that. And who else is there? Other people who are mean, angry, and like to hurt and kill others. And what do? They hurt and try to kill each other. So this is called hell. And conversely, if you're a kind, loving person who's motivated to do good for others, you go to a plane like that. And similarly, other people are there who are kind and loving, and you help each other. You're kind to each other. It's a beautiful place, and this is called heaven. So it works out something like this. And but really what determines more of where we go is not so much even our actions in this life, but the motivation behind our action, because that's who we actually are. Right? For example, we can, let's say, many different people may do a particular thing, but they may have different motivations. For example, we're building the Temple of Vedic Planetarium, and many, many devotees are making donations to see that this temple is built. And what is their motivation? Now, some people, they may want to have their name on a wall or a brick or whatever. Other people may be motivated by the fact that this is, you know, the glorious, it's going to spread the glory of Prabhupada's teachings all over the world, and so it should be done. And so different people, they can have a different motivation, either for, you know, prestige. I want to be recognized, you know, I've got the platinum coin or the gold coin or something like that. Or maybe simply because it should be done. So it's actually our motivation, not the activity itself, that determines what the consciousness is. Or let's put it this way, it's the consciousness that determines the motivation, right? So if I actually want to see Krishna glorified, or do I want to see myself glorified? Like this. Same activity, but different motivation, and this is going to have an effect, or a different effect, in terms of the plane of that we go to in the mental world after this life. So, therefore, understanding that we're motivated to act without duplicity, to act in a selfless way, to act, to do good simply because it ought to be done. This is actually sattva-gun. Rajagun means I'm doing it because I want something back. I want some recognition. I want some prestige. Better than that is sattva-gun, which, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, acting simply because it should be done. This is sattva. And so that's a higher motivation. If we do it because it should be done, or because it's even higher than that, because it's pleasing to Krishna. So this is what Prabhupada was trying to instill in us, Krishna consciousness, that let me do every activity that I do with the consciousness of pleasing Krishna. And that consciousness takes us actually beyond the mental world. It'll take us to the spiritual world. Because the consciousness that we develop, this determines exactly where we're going to go. So the consciousness, it's the consciousness that we want to be thinking about, develop. So every act that we do, whether sweeping the floor, cleaning a pot, whatever, any little thing can be turned into a spiritual activity by the consciousness of simply thinking, let me do this nicely to please Krishna. That's all that's required. It's a change of consciousness. Our motivation, let me do this nicely to please Krishna. And that is the highest motivation. That, because it's selfless, it's only done to please Krishna, therefore we become free from the reaction called karma, which binds us to this material world. So very simple, but not easy. Not easy, why? Because we're contaminated. Our consciousness is polluted, as Prabhupada says, by contact with the material atmosphere, with modes of material nature. Therefore, we find ourselves motivated in various different ways for different activities. Sense gratification or prestige. And various. It all comes down to various kinds of sense gratification. So we have to purify ourselves, purify our consciousness by the process of sadhana bhakti. And we have a very powerful process of sadhana. If we follow this process, we will find ourselves automatically becoming free from all the anartas and coming closer and closer to developing love of Krishna. So the path of Krishna consciousness, it's wonderful for everyone. It's joyfully performed. Everybody benefits. And we want to spread this more and more all over the world, that we have such a wonderful thing and we want to share it. Maybe if some of you have seen, I don't know, I just came in contact with this the other day, Fortunate People on Facebook. Apparently some devotees at the Soho Temple are doing this. But on Facebook you look at Fortunate People. And what they're doing is making a video of people. They're asking people on the street when the Harinam party is going by, they ask the people, so what do you think about these Hare Krishnas? And there's very nice things where people are explaining how they're very much appreciative of the Hare Krishnas. One devotee was talking about there was a news item where the police would arrested two pickpockets on what's the street down there? Oxford Street, yeah. So they arrested some pickpockets, and just about that time, and the news camera was there videoing this. And just about that time, the Harinam party was going by. And so the policeman was telling the crooks, he said, the best thing on Oxford Street is the Hare Krishnas. Don't you agree? And he was shaking. So like that. And then there's another devotee. I was giving the same class in Soho Street not too long ago. I was there before I came here. And I was explaining that, yes, we want to ask everybody, chant the Hare Krishna mantra just one time. Do this every day, please. And so one devotee, he took that up, and he started, when he was on book distribution, he would ask the people to chant Hare Krishna mantra, and he would make them record it on his phone. And so on his YouTube page, or not Facebook page, rather, he was also, you can see these videos of people chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, so he's starting like that. So, yes, we want to do this. Get everybody chant. Chant just one time. Chant one time every day. Chant 100 times every day. As much as you can. This will change the world. And we must have faith in this. By bringing Krishna into the picture, it will change the world. We read in the 8th canto, for example, of the Bhagavatam, the struggle, the fight between the devas and the daityas. And it's not going so well for the devas, because Indra insulted his spiritual master, Brihaspati. And so they're getting kicked around. And so they're going, well, what do we do? How do we save the day? And so they say, now is the time to invoke the mode of goodness. Because when the tamagun is prominent, the demon's energy, they get energy from that. Their energy increases. And so to counteract that, you have to bring in more sattva, more goodness. So now is the time to invoke the mode of goodness. So the devas, they went to Brahma, and they got benediction from him. And by bringing in sattva into the situation, the devas, they felt more strength, and they were able to win the battle. So it's the same situation today. The world is being run by demonic personalities. But, you know, we don't have the power to fight a physical battle with them, to kill them. But it's also not even necessary, because by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, they can be purified also. Everybody gets purified. And so the result of the Spirit's revolution is that everybody becomes happy. Nobody has to get killed. Nobody, no bloodshed. Simply everybody becomes happy. So this is the revolution that we want to have. Not this. This. Haribo, Haribo. Chant the Maha Mantra once or many times during the day. So, spread the revolution. Vive la revolution. The spiritual revolution. Spiritual evolution. Hare Krishna. So we'll stop there. Comments or questions?